Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Crime and Investigations, I Am a Killer is a brand new 10-part true crime documentary series produced in partnership with Netflix by an excellent production team including me, Danny Tipping.
And me, Tom Adams. Each episode tells the story of a prisoner convicted of capital murder and sentenced to death.
In this podcast, we'll be going into the making of each episode, revealing what it was like to produce this incredible series.
My name's Charles Thompson. I've been on death row for 18 years, 19 years altogether on this case. I was convicted of capital murder, double murder statute, and it was girlfriend and another man.
Episode 8 is the story of Charles Thompson, and this one's called Intended Evil. Charles Thompson is arrested, tried and convicted for the murder of his ex-girlfriend and her new lover. It's complicated slightly by the fact that Denise Hayslip, his ex-girlfriend, didn't die when he shot her and died days later in hospital, which opened the question of whether or not he had murdered her or intended to kill her. And I think that's where we are going with the title Intended Evil, Tom.
So, yeah, the episode was called Intended Evil because, in fact, it's a quote from one of the interviewees in the film who, when asked whether the hospital killed Denise or whether Chuck killed Denise, he says, well, the hospital didn't intend evil. And to his mind, Charles Thompson clearly did intend evil with that gunshot. So that's what we're exploring, whether there was intended evil from Chuck Thompson or whether it was a tragic mistake that through problems encountered at the hospital resulted in the death of Denise.
And this one, again, like all the shows in the series, is not perhaps quite as straightforward as it first appears. You know, angry ex-boyfriend kills ex-girlfriend and her new partner and is convicted and sent to prison. On the face of it, it's a fairly straightforward cut and dry story. But as we get into it, there's a lot more. The nature of his relationship with Denise, the fact that she didn't die at the scene of the crime, she died days later in hospital, and his intention on going there that night with a loaded gun, none of which detracts from the fact that this was a terrible and tragic murder case with two victims. But then we meet in this film a number of really interesting characters. The medical examiner at the time, Denise's son, who is an incredible man, who gives a really touching and powerful interview. And again, this story takes a couple of turns that perhaps you weren't expecting in the first act. So it's another story that I think will stick with us.
I mean, Chuck's belief is that the hospital were responsible for Denise's death, and he believes that what happened there led to her death, whereas others in the film believe that it all started at the time when he was in Denise's apartment and fired the shots. It's undisputed that he killed Denise's boyfriend, but the question is, was he responsible for Denise's death?
And Chuck Thompson, is an interesting character. Again, he's at the time of this crime, he's a confident, charismatic young guy, good-looking fella, circle of friends, holding down jobs and relationships, you know, and things take a dramatic turn for the worse. I mean, you'll see in the film that the Chuck Thompson that we meet years later in prison is still an extremely confident and charismatic man. In the interviews, you'll see someone that, you know, has no problem discussing his crimes and addressing the camera and telling his story. And he's obviously a bright and confident individual.
So I went down to court and they told me, look, we're dropping the manslaughter and the aggravated assault charges. And I looked at the bailiff and asked him, what does this mean? And they said, we're introducing capital murder charges. And I looked at the bailiff and he says, this means a death penalty now, boy. I'm like, death penalty? What are you talking about? And he said, yeah, you're charged under double murder statute. I said, I didn't kill her. The hospital did. I had already talked to my family on the phone and heard that there was complications, that the hospital had suffocated her. You know, I was devastated.
In between the first and second interview, there's a 90-day break, which is a rule in for this particular Texas prison board. I mean, I think the inmates attending an interview and interacting with film crews is considered a privilege. It's not, again, it's a drain on the resources of the prison, as you can imagine, setting these up and facilitating them. And so there's a 3-month break between, you know, the first interview and being able to arrange a second interview. So we had you know, set up the first interview, go away, pick up our interviews, our other contributors, and then wait the full 3 months before we could go back and revisit Charles Thompson in prison to get our second interview. And the second interview in all these films is really key, because we go back, one, with the inmate having been able to contemplate the first interview and sort of develop their thoughts and feelings about what happened and how they presented themselves. But also we go back with a much deeper level of understanding of the story, having met them, having interviewed the other contributors, got their side of the story. And we had the opportunity to then go back and certainly relay some of our findings, some of our thoughts and feelings to the inmate and have them respond to that, which I think really gives that second interview an incredible amount of weight.
We had a loose form for each show in that we would have the first interview with our inmate. We would then go away, learn more about the characters involved by meeting some of them, by speaking to them, by understanding other perspectives on those events. And then we'd return to our inmate at the end of the programme to see how they reacted to things we might have learnt on the way, or for clarification on points, or whatever it might be. That last interview was a movable feast. It was very, very flexible in that it was purely what we felt was important to be said by that person, and that's what we included. So if there were just one or two points, then that final interview would be a short interview very near the end. If there was enough that was engaging, interesting and new from our other characters, that's where our programme would go. So although there was a format to a degree, we had the flexibility, thankfully, from commissioners at A&E and both at Netflix, that what they wanted was a story well told, and not to fit any format that ticked boxes. It gave us the freedom to tell the story the way we felt that story should be told.
Yeah, and explore, because all of them, as we said after the first interview, actually were, you know, despite how well our research done and how prepared we were, all of the stories took different turns and led us down avenues we weren't expecting. And so we ended up, on a number of cases, you know, changing tack. And none of them, as we said, are straightforward. We interview Wade Hayslip in this film, who is the son of Denise, one of Charles Thompson's victims. And Wade is a, you know, incredible interviewee, very reflective and thoughtful and reasonable in discussing what happened to his mother and his thoughts and feelings about Charles Thompson. And we play a segment of our interview with Charles Thompson to Wayne, and he responds. And Tom, how would you describe that?
It was one of the decisions we made quite early in the production process. We decided not to have commentary and not be able to... By not having commentary, we weren't able to turn corners ourselves within the films. And equally, we couldn't remind people of information we had received along our journey. The way round that, because what we wanted to do was remind the viewer of facts or information that we'd learnt on the way. And we came up with the idea of replaying some earlier interviews to remind the viewer of that part of the story. And what that then meant was it also meant we could play it to our interviewee, whoever we were interviewing at the time. And we would also be able to see what their reaction was. They may disagree with what they'd just heard entirely. They may agree with it and give additional information. But it became part of the way we would tell the story. It was a way of reminding the viewer of a piece of information, but also driving the story forward by getting some kind of response from whoever we were playing that piece of tape from. And very often it provoked strong reactions.
As you'd imagine, because in this instance we're playing Wade, the testimony of his mother's murderer. In other instances we're playing the inmate interviews of the relatives of their victims. So, you know, it is an emotional...
Yeah, and very often the person not in prison won't have heard or seen or had anything to do with the person in prison for, you know, since the trial, if at all. And vice versa, the person, the inmate may not have heard any of these characters from the outside world. So there's a high degree of emotion tied into hearing these voices, and some people didn't want to hear certain things, and we also took the decision to not play clips to certain people for the same reason.
And I think you'll see when you see this film, Chuck Thompson's story, it's quite striking how Wade responds to hearing Charles's interview. You know, and I think it really is one of the high points of the film.
Well, she's not in the hospital if you don't shoot her. I mean, it's an easy excuse to make. It's an easy one to blame. Blame the hospital. So I would in his situation as well. Ultimately, though, the truth is that you held a gun to somebody's face and you pulled the trigger. And the reason why we know it was held close because there were powder burns on her cheek.
He's an extraordinary character, Wade, in that he seems so forgiving about what happened. I don't actually know. He doesn't forgive, but he finds everything utterly reasonable. And even when Charles Thompson escapes and is caught 4 days later after having had too much to drink, I mean, there's an initial laugh, you know, he finds it ridiculous. And then he goes, well, actually, you know, he's been in prison a while. He probably, what would I know? I haven't experienced that. Maybe that's exactly what you want after being in prison. You want a few beers. He's so reasonable.
I don't know if it's me, but obviously I was, as we went in, the process being that obviously I was across the selection of the 10 stories. I'd read the treatments and the scripts, as much as you can script a show like this. And then the team went off and they got the interview. They did all the hard work there and they went and got the interviews and start constructing these films. And then the next time I sit down and have anything to do with it is at the rough cut. So by which time I'd already formed an idea of who these characters are, who I think Chuck Thompson is. Or
Well, you've got a picture and, yeah, and a couple of paragraphs or a page and you make a decision.
And I've read
that.
The script, so I know the facts of the case, of the murder, of the how the crime unfolded, which is not much more than facts and dates and what was submitted in court. So in every essence, either consciously or subconsciously, in every instance we went into the edit, I thought I knew how I felt about this story and that inmate. And obviously Tom and Ned and the producer directors who had seen that story evolve from its original form on paper were a little bit more clued into what to expect. But I think in almost every instance I had my preconceptions tested, and certainly an appreciation for how complicated each and every one of these stories actually is, if not complicated, how multi-layered. And the skill of the team was really drawing out all the facets. You know, okay, we're going to give this guy, this inmate, this convicted killer, the opportunity to tell their story. But on the other hand, you're also going to hear, and in some cases for the first time, the story of these other guys that are involved in
We're going to hold him to account for various things on the way.
And I think in almost every instance, I came out feeling differently, or certainly having a different understanding of what I thought the story was. And I think that's the, you know, as Tom said, if the tagline is everybody has a story to tell, you know, I'd come to that with, and it might not be the one you're expecting to hear, because that's certainly the case for me in watching these shows.
To carry a torch for somebody to die for 20 years, it's, you know, okay, you know. I couldn't hate somebody that long. It's not in my blood. You know what they say about hate? It'll eat you up inside.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So in a more traditional documentary, you'd interview 5-6 people that you would listen to over the course of an hour, but each time we hear from them, we'd maybe hear a couple of lines, and then we'd go to someone else, hear a couple of lines from. We chose not to do it that way. We let people come on screen and tell their story for the most part in one long chunk, and that I think, what did it do, Danny? How did that?
Well, I think I think it's important. And again, like, it's not something I was necessarily expecting initially. We'd obviously discussed the fact that we weren't going to use any narrator, that the story would be told predominantly, that the narrative would be driven by, in the first instance, by our inmate, and then secondarily by our other contributors, and that we wouldn't interfere. You wouldn't hear the producer's voice or the or any kind of written narration. And then after that, the next key decision was to play our contributors' interviews in a chunk that you're going to see. There would be, you know, that act would be dominated by our inmate, and then our interview, and then we'd our interviewee rather, and then we'd move on to somebody else who could tell their part of the story, and they would all build on top of each other to form the whole picture, rather than interspersing sections of those individual interviews, you know, evenly throughout the show. And I think you stay with these characters longer, whether they're the victim's relatives or indeed in some cases the inmate's relatives or the arresting officer or the prosecutor, and they get time to tell the story. And you get, I think, as much as we can in you know, a 50-minute film, you get a feeling of who these people are, how they feel, and what they're going to say. We haven't just gone, which would have been the easier way, with their nicely cut sync or their sound bites. We've let them tell their story. We've let them pause for breath. We've let them respond emotionally in whatever way that is to the questions we're asking them. And you see that all play out. And I think it's a much better, each of them are much better films for that.
I think also it gives each film a sense of journey, in that we meet someone, we stay with them for a while, we learn from them, and then we move on to the next person. And as you say, each interview builds on the previous one. So you're getting the layers of story built up over the course of that 45 minutes, 50 minutes. And that then gives a sense of journey. It gives its own narrative line there. As we're learning more about the story, then we eventually go back to our inmate at the end of the programme, hopefully to tie up loose ends, or very often to just admit that there are loose ends. You know, nothing's ever done and dusted in these programmes.
No, and I don't think that was our job either. You know, we're not drawing a line at that. We're introducing and raising the issues and giving voice to people. In most instances, our inmates had never had the opportunity to tell their story. And in most instances, all our other contributors, the friends, relatives, prosecutors, arresting officers, hadn't been asked there to tell their story either, or certainly not since the court case. So, yeah, there are loose ends, and there are as many questions raised as answered. But I think that's what a good documentary does.
We'd love to hear what you think of the series. Comment on Facebook or Twitter with hashtag IAmAKiller. And don't forget to rate us and subscribe to this podcast series.
The I Am A Killer podcast is hosted by Tom Adams and Danny Tipping and is produced by Sam Pearson, Steph Nardilli and Matt Talent, with editing by Susanna Lawrence.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What makes a stalker tick? I'm Ruchira Sharma, inviting you to delve into Anatomy of a Stalker, an original crime and investigation podcast.
That police officer's partner drove to my house to warn me that this man would kill me.
She'd look in the rearview mirror, out from the backseat would up pop the ex-husband.
Don't miss Anatomy of a Stalker. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts. The hunt begins now.